Hello, this is Terry Burdick reading to you today from the Commercial News for the weekend edition. Saturday and Sunday, March 8th and 9th. Let's turn our attention first to our front page today, where we have as our photo headline, Covington teacher named best in VFW District 6, special education teacher Ashley Grissom to be honored Sunday by Kayla White, of the Danville Commercial News. Covington Elementary School teacher Ashley Grissom has been named Elementary School Teacher of the Year for VFW Indiana District 6 for the year 2025. Grissom also earned the Covington VFW's Teacher of the Year Award in 2024. According to Michelle Beck, principal of CES, what makes Grissom so valuable to the district is her unique teaching style and technique. Mrs. Grissom really believes children learn through the process of discovery, and she arranges her classrooms and lessons so they can do just that, Beck said. She allows them to work through their challenges and struggles. She doesn't just swoop right in and give them the answer. She helps guide and mold them through their thought processes. Beck added that this style of teaching really helps the material stick with Grissom's students. As a developmental preschool teacher, Grissom spends a lot of energy keeping her classroom interesting. She purchases most of her classroom materials and sensory play supplies out of her own pocket, and she's also intentional about decorating her classroom in bright, happy colors to make the students feel safe and comfortable. A mother of four boys, Grissom believes it's her responsibility to prepare both her children and her students to become self-sufficient, independent, productive members of society. I'm not growing boys. I want to grow young men that are going to be productive and helpful in the community, and all of these kids have that chance too, Grissom said. She has two bachelor's degrees in exceptional needs education and intense intervention, as well as intercultural studies. She's also a certified iSprout trainer, so she's qualified to help other teachers identify students who are at risk of not meeting the state's mathematics and literacy goals. Though Grissom has been teaching special education for 12 years, it was only a few years ago that she decided to pursue opportunities to teach early childhood special education. I did a year at Georgetown, Illinois as the early childhood special education teacher, and that really sparked my interest. I love the younger kids and helping mold them into having that independent ability to function in life and in school, Grissom said. Grissom's dedication to the well-being of kids with special needs extends far beyond the classroom. For a number of years, she's volunteered at Danville's AMBUC Summer Camp, as well as Operation Christmas Child, the Special Olympics, and the local youth soccer and baseball leagues. Because of this dedication, Grissom is known for instilling a sense of pride in her students, not only encouraging them to take pride in who they are, but pride in their community and country, according to the person who nominated her. It's not just the students at CES who benefit from Grissom's passion and dedication, according to Beck. She's always willing to help out and assist, regardless of who's in need and what child needs attention, Beck said. She doesn't just focus on her own. She's a team player, and she's always there to help. As for Grissom, the award came as a total surprise. I'm still just astonished, she said. I don't look at what I do as over the top or something to be awarded. I just do what I love and what I feel passionate that needs to be given to my students. Grissom also said she's grateful to her community for their recognition. It was a very nice honor to realize that someone felt led to nominate me. But then to have the VFW go through all the nominations that were sent in and decide I was the winner, I never guessed that would have happened, but it did. It's pretty cool to see that people notice what I do, she said. VFW Indiana District 6 includes 12 VFW posts in Covington, West Terre Haute, Rockville, Carmel, Lebanon, Greencastle, Brownsburg, Crawfordsville, Terre Haute, Noblesville, Rochdale, and Cicero, Indiana. Grissom will be recognized for her award at the district's quarterly meeting at 11 a.m. on Sunday at Terre Haute VFW Post 972, located at 1111 Veterans Square, Terre Haute, Indiana. We continue on the front page with our information for your upcoming local elections. Today's headline is Local Election 2025 Q&A, Hoopston Mayor. Challenger Tracy Carter and incumbent Jeff Wise answer key questions. On April 1st, several elections will take place across Vermilion County, including those for alderperson, mayor of Hoopston and Georgetown, school boards, DAC College Board, and village trustees. As part of this year's local election coverage, the Commercial News is running a series of question and answer stories, giving each candidate a chance to share their vision for their community so voters can make a more informed decision when they head to the polls. Today, we learn more about two candidates running for mayor of the city of Hoopston, challenger Tracy Carter and incumbent Jeff Weiss. Candidates were limited to three sentences each in their answers. Question one, what is the top issue facing the city of Hoopston, and what do you intend to do about it if elected or reelected? Tracy Carter, our water infrastructure needs to be looked at. I just got a letter in the mail about something in the water that we need to look at. It's not a dangerous level, but something that needs to be addressed and looked at. I've already talked to two individuals that are willing to help me, if I become mayor, to start writing grants for the town to start getting money so that we can start making infrastructure changes. Jeff Wise. Our top issue is maintaining the financial well-being of the city of Hoopston. Revenue has continued to decrease while costs have risen at an alarming rate. We need to continue being good stewards of our tax money and stretching every tax dollar to maintain the current level of services that are provided to our residents. Question two, how do you plan to engage your constituents if elected or reelected? Carter, I'm a very open individual and I'm not afraid to get my hands dirty and help out where needed at work, so I think I would have the same approach with the city. I also have a very good working relationship with the city treasurer as far as budget numbers and knowing where we're at budget-wise, and I think I can carry that over into the city as well. Wise. When I was elected mayor, I partnered with the Hoopston Public Library to provide a public Q&A session the morning of the first Saturday of every month. The library has been an outstanding host and the sessions have been quite successful. I will continue this event as long as I am mayor. Why should you be elected? Question three. I'm a fair and honest person, this is Carter's answer, and I'd like to see some change for the better. I like to be transparent, so I don't want to hold any secrets or anything from anybody. I think that we can make the town a better place by staying focused on our future. Wise. The city has experienced a lot of progress over the last 3 years. It hasn't been easy, but the entire city council has stepped up and decided that we're not kicking the can down the road any longer. We all work together very well, and I want to help continue with the momentum that we've built up during my time as mayor. In our community briefs, cemetery to remove decorations. The staff of Georgetown Cemetery will be removing fall and winter decorations Monday, March 17th. Those who want to save decorations should remove them before March 17th. Spring decorations should not be placed before March 17th, so call 217-304-1404 if you have any questions. And news for library work, the library is collecting for hurricane relief. The Westville Library will be a drop-off site for hurricane relief for victims from North Carolina. The library is located at 233 South State Street in Westville. On March 1st through the 31st, the library will have an escape room giveaways. Friends of the Westville Library, along with Adventure Arcade Escape Rooms, are giving away 4 tickets to an escape room experience. Simply check out an item at the Westville Library during March to be entered into a drawing for a chance to win. The library is also having a stuffy sleepover. Drop off your favorite stuffed animal at the library on March 19th between 9:30 a.m. and 5:30 p.m. for a fun sleepover. The Stuffies will get to spend the night at the library for all kinds of adventures. The next day, March 20th, you can pick up your bestie after 3 p.m. and your Stuffie will have a cool photo book to share with you showing the highlights of their sleepover party. Okay, that's super cute. That concludes the reading of today's community briefs. Also on our front page today, Indiana's military units scrub DEI content from websites and social media. And this is an article from Carson Gerber from the CNHI State Reporter with a dateline of Bunker Hill, Indiana. In 2023, on Women's Equality Day, Grissom Air Reserve Base published an article highlighting Colonel Summer Fields, who had recently become the first female commander of the 434th Air Refueling Wing. The story is no longer on Grissom's website. A link leads to a page not found notice. Military units in Indiana last week began removing content from their social media pages and websites as part of a digital content refresh to align with President Donald Trump's executive order to eliminate diversity, equity, and inclusion, also known as DEI, from the armed forces. That includes subject matters that promote gender ideology, critical race theory, and content that goes against merit-based or colorblind policies, according to the U.S. Department of Defense memo sent on February 26th. Content focused on immutable characteristics such as race, ethnicity, or sex must be removed. Further guidance from the Defense Department included a 59-word list, including the words dignity, respect, culture, accessibility, history, and sense of community, to help identify DEI content, according to documents obtained by Texas Public Radio. Indiana units under the Defense Department all made posts last week announcing the DEI purge, including Grissom, Crane Naval Surface Warfare Center, and the 38th Infantry Division. For some service members, removal of content that celebrated the achievements of women and people of color feels like a slap in the face, according to Gretcher Klinger, who serves in Air Force Special Operations from 2009 to 2015 and now is Director of Veterans of American Ideals, a project of Human Rights First. Deleting these stories doesn't make those experiences any less real or less meaningful, Klingler said. It does make them less accessible, and it's purposefully narrowing those stories whose stories are being told for people who celebrate their military service alongside their various identities. The order to scrub online content is part of a sweeping effort by the Trump administration to roll back DEI initiatives implemented under President Joe Biden, who expanded diversity training throughout the federal workforce and directed agencies to establish or elevate chief diversity officers. Since Trump's executive order, West Point has shut down 12 clubs geared toward Black and women engineers, as well as clubs created for Native Americans and Hispanic students. The Pentagon ended official celebrations recognizing a range of groups, from Black History Month to recognition of people with disabilities. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth, in February, described the new way of thinking during his first public meeting with troops, saying, "The single dumbest phrase in military history is our diversity is our strength. I think our strength is our unity," Hegseth said. "Our strength is our shared purpose, regardless of our background." Retired Colonel Tim Calhoun, who commanded Grissom's 434th Air Refueling Wing from 2010 to 2012, agrees with that sentiment. During his 35-year military career, the Purdue University graduate viewed annual diversity training requirements at the time as a distraction from his mission to protect the nation. "My personal feeling is most people resented having to go and take time out of their day duty to sit there and sort of be lectured to about how we're all supposed to behave," he said. As Commander Calhoun operated under the Equal Opportunity Program, which is still in place, to foster an environment free from personal, social, or institutional barriers, according to the Department of the Air Force. The program prohibits unlawful discrimination and harassment, including sexual harassment against military members. Calhoun said the program worked to ensure members in his unit felt empowered to file complaints about instances of discrimination. That's in contrast to DEI initiatives implemented under the Biden administration, which pushed to enlist more minority members, regardless of their training or capabilities, Calhoun argued. "Diversity for the sake of diversity is meaningless," he said. "When any organization is just overtly trying to meet numbers or percentages and largely ignores the capabilities, specific experiences, education, training, and knowledge, that hurts the organization. But aggressive rhetoric and measures to eliminate DEI is leading some minority service members to feel targeted," according to Klingler and with Veterans for American Ideals, who keeps in contact with members of the Defense Department. "Minorities worry they could be disciplined or reported as talking about race or inclusion," she explained. "It's gone from a culture of I've got your back to a feeling of watch your back," Klinger said. "It feels in a way like a return to the McCarthy era and the Red Scare, where you don't know who's going to turn you in for what." She said that's an issue in the military, where around one-third of troops describe themselves as members of a racial minority, and nearly 18% are women, according to a 2023 analysis by the Defense Department. Military units were given until March 5th to purge their online sites of DEI-related content. Doug Hayes, Chief of Public Affairs at Grissom, said in an email that the base is working diligently to comply with the president's executive order within the timeline given. Calhoun said he's glad to see his former base removing DEI content, and he supports Trump's push to eliminate those initiatives. How well those efforts succeed, he noted, is yet to be determined. "Instead of nibbling away at it, which can take forever and not achieve your goal. They took what is clearly the military approach, Cahoon said. Only time will tell. Did they throw the baby out with the bathwater? Our final story today on the front page is to test and inspect and replace your expired smoke and CO alarms. This is a staff report. The Office of the Illinois State Fire Marshal, OSFM, reminds Illinoisans to test, inspect, and replace broken or expired smoke or CO alarms in their homes with new 10-year sealed battery alarms when they change their clocks this weekend as daylight savings time begins at 2 a.m. on Sunday, March 9th. Early warnings from smoke alarms are crucial, as on average, a person has less than 3 minutes to escape a home fire today, said Illinois State Fire Marshal James A. Rivera. Taking just a few minutes each month to test, inspect, and replace broken or expired alarms is simple, but working smoke alarms save lives. It's also important to review and practice your fire escape plan, identify two ways out of every room, and designate a meeting place outside the home. The time change serves as a biannual reminder to test all smoke and CO alarms in your home. If you find an alarm that is not working or is expired, replace the alarm immediately with a new 10-year sealed battery alarm. Review your fire escape plan with your family and hold a drill to practice your plan. The National Fire Protection Association, the NFPA, reports almost 3 out of every 5 home fire deaths in the U.S. resulted from fires in homes with no smoke alarms or non-working smoke alarms. More than a third, 38%, of home fire deaths result from fires in which no smoke alarms are present. When working smoke alarms are present in a home, the risk of dying in a home fire is cut by 60%. According to statistics from the Be Alarmed Smoke Alarm Installation Program, since 2018, 74% of pre-existing smoke alarms in homes that received new 10-year sealed battery smoke alarms from the Be Alarmed program were non-functional or were expired. We're excited to report our first direct save from our Be Alarm smoke alarm installation program in Greenville on February 16th, said Philip Zaleski, executive director of Camp I Am Me by the Illinois Fire Safety Alliance. This success highlights the hard work and dedication of the 320 departments across 61 Illinois counties, which continue to make a significant impact on fire safety. I encourage other departments to join us in our efforts to help save lives throughout the state. Thanks to the Be Alarm program, in 2024, over 2,800 Illinois homes and 5,252 residents are now protected by new smoke alarms and were educated about the importance of having a fire safety plan. Over 40,000 smoke alarms worth nearly $1 million of life-saving fire safety devices have been distributed to Illinois fire departments since 2018 when the Be Alarm smoke alarm installation program began. Be Alarmed is a fire safety education and smoke alarm installation program administered cooperatively between Camp I Am Me and the Office of the State Fire Marshal. The Be Alarm program is aimed at creating fire safe communities. For more information on the Be Alarm program, visit www.ifsa.org. We're a little past the midpoint of our time together today, and I wanted to bring to your attention the death notices. We have 3 today. In Danville, David Eugene Kaiser, age 55, passed away on March 5th. His visitation was held on March 9th at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. James Jim Zarn, age 59, passed away at 11:35 p.m. on March 4th at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. His visitation will be Monday, March 10th, from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Danville. His services will be at 10 a.m. on Tuesday, March 11th, at the funeral home, with Pastor Al Rudy officiating. His burial will be at Sunset Memorial Park. And today's final death notice is from Greensburg, Indiana, Christopher James Bechtold, Chris, age 75, passed away on February 23rd at our hospice home in Columbus, Indiana. The celebration of Chris's life will be from 2 to 5 p.m. on March 11th at the Covington VFW, and his burial will be at the Fairview Cemetery in Servia, Indiana. We have a follow-up story to the stories that we read last week regarding the death of Gene Hackman. And today's headline from the Associated Press said Gene Hackman died of heart disease and his wife died of hantavirus about a week prior, authorities say. Dateline Santa Fe, New Mexico. Actor Gene Hackman died of heart disease a full week after his wife died from hantavirus in their New Mexico hillside home, and he may not have been aware she was dead because he showed severe signs of Alzheimer's disease, authorities revealed on Friday. Both deaths were ruled to be from natural causes, Chief Medical Examiner Dr. Heather Jarrell said alongside state fire and health officials at a news conference. Mr. Hackman showed evidence of advanced Alzheimer's disease, Jarrell said. He was in a very poor state of health. He had significant heart disease, and I think ultimately that's what resulted in his death. Authorities ruled out foul play after the bodies of Hackman, 95, and Betsy Arakawa, 65, were discovered February 26. Immediate tests for carbon monoxide poisoning were negative. Investigators found that the last known communication and activity from Arakawa was February 11th, when she visited a pharmacy, a pet store, and a farm market in Santa Fe County. Hackman's pacemaker last showed signs of activity a week later, and that he had an abnormal heart rhythm on February 18th, the day he likely died, Jarrell said. It's quite possible he was not aware she was deceased. Their bodies were found a little over a week later. Hackman was found in the home's entryway. His death was tied to heart disease with Alzheimer's disease contributing. Arakawa was found in a bathroom. Authorities linked her death to hantavirus pulmonary syndrome, a rare but potentially fatal disease spread by infected rodent droppings. Thyroid medication pills prescribed to Arakawa were found nearby and weren't listed as contributing to her death. Hantavirus is typically reported in spring and summer, often due to exposure that occurs when people are near mouse droppings in homes, sheds, or poorly ventilated areas. This is the first confirmed case of hantavirus in New Mexico this year. Jarrell said it was not known how quickly Arakawa died. Investigators earlier retrieved personal items from the couple's home, including a monthly planner and two cell phones. One of the couple's three dogs also was found dead in a crate in a bathroom closet near Arakawa, while two other dogs survived. Authorities initially misidentified the breed. Dogs do not get sick from hantavirus, said Aaron Phipps, a veterinarian with the New Mexico Health Department. A necropsy will be done on the dog. The sheriff considers this an open investigation until they finish checking into cell phone data and receive results of the dog's necropsy. When Hackman and Arakawa were found, the bodies were decomposing with some mummification, a consequence of body type and climate, in Santa Fe's especially dry air at an elevation of nearly 7,200 feet. Hackman, a Hollywood icon, won two Oscars during a storied career in films, including The French Connection, Hoosiers, and Superman from the 1960s until his retirement in the early 2000s. Arakawa, born in Hawaii, studied as a concert pianist, attended the University of Southern California, and met Hackman in the mid-1980s while working at a California gym. The couple's stucco Pueblo Revival-style home sits on a hill in a gated community at the southern tip of the Rocky Mountains. Santa Fe is known as a refuge for celebrities, artists, and authors. Hackman dedicated much of his time in retirement to painting and writing novels far from Hollywood's social circuit. He served for several years on the board of trustees at the Georgia O'Keeffe Museum in Santa Fe, and he and his wife were investors in local businesses. Montoya Bryan reported from Albuquerque, New Mexico, and Bowerman reported from Bellingham, Washington. Associated Press reporter John Seawater also contributed from Toledo, Ohio. And while we know Gene Hackman best as an actor, I know you all from the Danville area also know that he is one of your native sons. May he rest in peace. In news from around our state, from the Capital News, Illinois, we get the headline, High School Student Helps Draft Bill to Require Opioid Overdose Medications in Illinois Libraries. Dateline Elgin. High school students generally don't participate in drafting legislation. Jordan Henry is an exception. A senior at the Illinois Math and Science Academy, the Elgin native is working with her state representative on a bill that would require public libraries to keep on hand medications that can reverse an opioid overdose. The legislation would also require libraries to always have at least one staff member working who's trained on responding to an overdose situation. Henry, 18, said she first became interested in substance abuse issues earlier in her high school career when she learned about the war on drugs, a policy movement kicked off by President Richard Nixon in the early 1970s. Though the movement has been through many iterations, it is consistently focused on preventing drug use through criminalization. "We've really used punishment where care is needed," Henry said of the movement. Henry started volunteering with local nonprofits in the northwest suburbs of Chicago that tackle substance abuse as well as the stigma behind it. "Seeing it as an issue at large and an issue close to home has made me really want to dedicate a lot of time and effort to it," she said of the opioid epidemic's effects on her community. Through volunteering, Henry learned about the harm reduction strategies such as syringe exchange programs and access to fentanyl test strips. Opioid antagonists, which counteract the effects of an opioid overdose, are another example of harm reduction. The medicine can be injected with a needle or ingested via nasal spray like naloxone, the most common opioid antagonist. Henry was a classmate of Democrat State Representative Anna Moeller's daughter when they both attended Elgin High School before Henry transferred to IMSA, but the state representative only officially met Henry in 2023. Moeller was collecting ballot signatures door-to-door when she met Henry's mother, who connected them, knowing Henry's interest in public health policy. Moeller said Henry presented her with the research he'd done, including having found similar library-based opioid antagonist programs in other places around the country. Moeller was complimentary of Henry's follow-through and her maturity, and said she agreed to work with Henry after hearing her pitch. Despite being aware of the growing movement to have opioid antagonists available in public spaces, Moeller said she had never thought of libraries as a solution. "When you think about it, a library is a great place to have this available," Moeller said. "They're very well used by people, they're places you can go for free, and there's usually no barriers to being there." The proposal, House Bill 1910, does not provide for funding from the state, but it stipulates the opioid antagonist may be supplied by local county health departments. If the health departments are unable to supply the medicine or funding to purchase the medicine, Moeller said alternative sources would be found. Training library staff on how to administer opioid antagonists would be overseen by organizations selected by the Illinois Department of Public Health. The proposal does not specify the amount of opioid antagonists each library should have available, only that all libraries open to the general public in the state shall maintain a supply of opioid antagonists in an accessible location. Narcan, a common brand of Naxalene, has been available in Chicago public libraries since 2022. The city's initiative included training library staff to administer the medicine. "What this bill would do is to expand that all over Illinois," Henry said. "I know it would be super beneficial in the suburbs and especially in rural areas." In an appearance on the Chicago Department of Public Health's Healthy Chicago podcast last year, Chicago Public Library Commissioner Chris Brown said he wasn't initially sure the program would have success, but in the program's first 20 months, Chicago Public Library said it distributed over 10,000 Narcan kits to the community. Brown said it helps to provide an alternative to substance abuse or health centers. Well, this has been a really fast 30 minutes today, but let's spend the last few minutes we have together looking at something that might be of interest to all of us. Celebrate National Nutrition Month. Connect nutrition, health, and flavor with dairy. This March, celebrate National Nutrition Month by raising a glass of cold milk. Count on dairy to bring together a wide range of food to create delicious, nutritious meals. These meals in turn connect us to family, friends, local farms, and better health. Since 1980, the Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics has been raising awareness about the importance of nutrition for individuals of all ages with this month-long initiative. Dairy, with its versatile roles in recipes and meals, fits well with this year's theme of Food Connects Us. Dairy is often the foundational ingredient in well-loved family recipes to some of the most nutrient-dense meals. Fueling health at every age. The 2025 Dietary Guidelines for Americans recommends 3 servings of dairy a day. Reach for low-fat milk, yogurt, and cheese to meet those dairy goals throughout your life, said Monica Nyman, senior nutrition educator and registered dietitian with the St. Louis Dairy Council. Almost 90% of Americans fall short in meeting this goal. If you're looking to make a small, sustainable change to your eating habits, adding a serving of milk, yogurt, or cheese to your day is a great start. Specifically, milk, yogurt, and cheese are excellent sources of calcium, and consuming adequate calcium from an early age helps us reduce the risk of osteoporosis or weak bones in our later years. These foods also provide quality protein, which supports muscle growth and helps preserve muscle mass as we age. Well, happy Dairy Month to all of you. This has been Terry Burdick reading from the Danville Commercial News for Saturday, March 8th and Sunday, March 9th. I look forward to reading again with you all soon. Have a great week.